Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty on a Monday, straight Monday. That's when we're recording this. And we're going to recap Bellator 272 and the UFC fight night that just took place on ESPN and ESPN+. Let's see, that one was called, for you purists, UFC on ESPN Font versus Aldo. It's also known as UFC on ESPN 31. UFC Vegas 44. I think that covers it all. But for Bellator, it was their final card of the year. So we'll go over the big fights there, including the title fight, which had a great ending. Sergio Pettis versus Kyoji Horiguchi. And then, of course, with the UFC, we're going to go through most of the card, focusing again on the big fights. And that, of course, included Jose Aldo versus Rob Font, former UFC featherweight champion Jose Aldo, now competing as a bantamweight. It's always special when the great ones compete, especially when you feel like it may be the end. Plus, a lot of news to discuss that's taken place in the last few days since we were last with you. Buckle up, Junkie Nation. Here we go. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Monday, December 6th. Let's get right to it, man. I want to discuss the UFC first this time. Usually we go kind of in sequential order of how the fights played out this weekend, but I'm just chomping at the bit, man. Jose Aldo versus Rob Font. That was one hell of a main event. And even though the judges turned in scores of 50-45, 50-45, and 49-46, I really thought it could be 2-2 going into round five. And I also thought every round after round three, well, you know what? Almost every round, Font had the type of offense that could knock out Jose Aldo, or at least stop him, you know, via strikes. And so that's why the fight was really, really compelling. Do not let the judges' scorecards tell you otherwise if you just didn't get a chance to see it and you're, you know, only now finding out, or, you know, you plan on watching it later. It was really, really a fun fight to watch. Both guys have incredible speed and precision, and both guys have great ability to recover as well. I still can't get over it. Didn't it seem like every first minute of every round, Font was just better than Jose and on the verge of taking out Jose? And like the last 4 minutes of every round, it almost seemed like it went the other way, whether it was Jose getting the fight to the ground and just, you know, banking the round via some ground and pound, via some Brazilian jiu-jitsu, or just holding his own in the striking.
It's a weird fight to describe to people, because in the press conference, you know, Rob Font had mentioned he feels like he could beat Jose Aldo. And that sounds weird if you're looking at the scorecards, but if you watch the fight, it actually looks like he probably could. I think where he got away was you kind of hit the nail on the head. That first minute of the round, he would do well. And I think it's because he was pressuring Jose Aldo in that first minute. But then he would kind of get away from that. And when he did that, I think is when Jose started to implement his game. I thought it was a good game plan by Tyson Chartier and New England Cartel. I just thought maybe they got away from the execution a little bit. And, I mean, you're facing a great like Jose Aldo. He's going to be tricky. He's, he's going to be crafty even at this age. So he would catch Rob every now and again with things that I think Rob just wasn't expecting, and he wasn't really making the adjustments to that. Great fight, and I think if they fought again, it could actually go the other way. But it's like George said, don't look at what the judges turned in. It was actually a really, really good fight.
Yeah, I would say that from what I gathered, man, I just think, I mean, I love this pressure because you want to wear Jose Aldo out. As he's gotten older, he's just not as strong across five rounds. Some even doubt he can make it. I may have even said that, to tell you the truth, you know, pre-fight. And taking him down is usually not a wise idea because he's just hard to take down. You burn a lot of energy. And then when you do take him down, he can get back up pretty quickly. And that's held up even through his older age. He's just got good balance, good athleticism. So just grab him one leg. He can, like, literally hop on another until he gets his back to the fence. And then he'll use some underhooks or just strength, man. That guy's just got this fast twitch body still that holds up. And so basically what you have to do is out strike him, right? The only problem is, and you can do it. I mean, Rob was putting a jab on Jose that I haven't seen someone really, really do like that. I mean, Peter Yan did, but Jose's got good head movement. He's got good reactions. He knows how to use his spacing. And then he has offensive weapons where he has you on your toes. So you usually don't get off. And the fact that he was really just catching them a lot, you know, I was like, wow, look at Rob Font. And then I realized that's hard to do for 5 minutes, you know. Mm-hmm. And every single round that Jose Aldo managed to turn around, it was a right hand. It was a right hand that Rob got hit with, where he either got knocked down or he got sent reeling back. And then that began the process of Jose putting it on him and then putting him on the ground. And like I say, he won a couple rounds just by the takedown and some ground and pound. A little bit of improvement, you know, in positioning via jiu-jitsu, but more by just basically controlling the fight on the ground and Rob not having the answer. Rob had a nice butterfly, but I just kept thinking, forget the elbows on the bottom. I know at one point he had a little bit of a strategy because Jose Aldo had one eye that was starting to close. And so you just keep rubbing that thing with your elbow or a fist. Okay, yeah, great. I get that. But it also wasn't working and the time on the clock was not there. And so once he recovered, he needed to get back up because even though he got knocked down, this is a 15-year argument that we've had on this show. If you get knocked down, does that mean you don't have much of a chin? Or if you get knocked on, you know, wobbly legs? Or does it mean you do have a great chin because you didn't get finished? You recovered, you know? But he just kind of kept getting hit with that right hand. He didn't have really an answer for the right hand. But, you know, again, 5 minutes against a world-class striker like Jose Aldo, that's tough. It could just be that it was a battle of chins, you know, and Jose's was holding up until he would land the right hand, and Rob's, you know, I don't know if it's a weight cut. I've never known Rob to really not have a chin, but that right hand just caused it. I think four of the rounds, it caused him a lot of trouble.
You know, if you're Rob Font right now, I think what you do is, luckily and unluckily, you have a guy that you could probably lean on that was in a very similar situation, you know, with Calvin Kattar. Calvin Kattar was looking like he might be the guy, you know, he's moving up. And then he hit that roadblock and he's had to reinvent himself. That's something that probably I think Rob Font might have to do, is take a step back, figure out what went wrong in that fight. But I don't think he's a guy that we all look at and go, he doesn't have it. I think he has it. He's just got to figure a way to put it all together. And you got to realize you're in one of the craziest divisions in the UFC.
He definitely has it. And he definitely troubled Jose Aldo many times this fight. It's just that the scores won't indicate it. But it was a fun fight to watch. And, yeah, Rob Font definitely doesn't have anything to prove to anyone. Rob Font had an impressive run up until this past Saturday night. So, if you'll recall, he had lost to a Sun Sal. That was his last loss about 3 years ago. And then he pulls off Sergio Pettis, Ricky Simon, Marlon Moraes, Cody Garbrandt. Pettis is now doing his thing over at Bellator. You know, he's a champion. Ricky Simone's been on a nice little run as well. Marlon Moraes is a former champ at WSOF, and he's been a contender at the UFC, a title challenger at the UFC. He's beaten Jose Aldo. And then Cody Garbrandt has been a world champion, you know, in the UFC. So that's quite a run. He's definitely proven he's at the top. And that's why I'm glad he's keeping his confidence, saying, I know, you know, I can beat Jose Aldo. It just wasn't his night. So he was classy, but he kept it real for his fans and I think for his self-confidence. And yes, goes just like Calvin Kattar, he'll be able to shake this off because that team's been through that. Of course, Calvin's got a big fight coming up against Giga Chikadze in January. So we'll see, you know, but it was a really, really entertaining fight. And as far as Jose Aldo, what's next for him? Well, he may have done some of his own matchmaking. He says, well, how about me versus TJ Dillashaw? Because Aldo and Jan don't even have a date yet. You know, it's not like we can say, well, you know, that fight's in 6 weeks. Should he be the sub or should he be on the same card? I mean, of course, we would love them all to be on the same card. You got your insurance, and then you got a great co-main event, and you got a big spotlight on the weight class. I've said that to I'm blue in the face. But we don't even know the date of Aljo versus Jan. So for now, I think Aldo did the right thing, and that's saying I'll fight TJ Dillashaw. Now, he looked pretty worn down from his fight, so I don't anticipate him and TJ Dillashaw like in 3 months. You know, it's a rough weight cut for starters. TJ is coming off an injury, but I think that injury puts him on the timeline where early 2022 he was going to be okay. And more than likely this would be for 5 rounds, unless they were the co-main event to the title fight, then they only go 3 rounds. You know, that might be different. Who knows? Mm-hmm. So we'll see. It's a little bit of time off, and then at the beginning of the new year, I guess Jose Aldo will know where he stands, but I think he should just be ready is the important thing. Be ready, because if Dillashaw can't go and the UFC goes, how would you like to be the backup? He may be interested in that, you know?
Yeah.
I maybe used to look at this wrong. I just used to think if, in fact, they tap your shoulder and go, homeboy's out, you're in. I know that most fighters will go, yes, all right, I'm in. But there's no way they can look themselves in the mirror and know that they just had a proper training camp for a title fight. There's no way you push yourself as hard when you're just the backup than versus when you're actually, you know, supposed to fight for the title.
But what's the drop-off, though?
Some of them can leave it.
I agree with you. I think there's no way. But really, what's the drop-off? Are you 10% less than what you would normally be, 5%? Or I mean, I don't think anybody's going in there 50%, right?
Okay. Physically, probably not much. 10%, we'll say. But I think there's something about mentally preparing yourself for a fight when you know, my weight cut, my media schedule, my coaches. But I think it's the mental part of just prepping yourself and being ready. Now, granted, others will say some of them can't handle that pressure, and, you know, that's why they prefer shorter camps because they get the same questions over and over. But I still feel like the majority of cases, I won't say all cases, but the majority of cases, I think someone who knows it's them is the most prepared. And what happens is, think about if Jose Aldo were to go in there and lose to Aljo, right? We don't wish injury upon anybody, but we'll say Jan can't go. Aljo says, all right, I'll take Aldo. They fight. Aldo loses a close one. You can't rebook them for another 2 years, I don't think, or 18 months. Aldo will have to win another 2-3 in a row, and now he would have losses to Jan and Aldo. It might be worth the risk. It might be worth risk. It might be – he may look at it as, well, that's better than having to fight Dillashaw and the winner of Jan. That's why I said I'm starting to rethink it. You know, I'm starting to rethink it. It's also an easy payday because what happens most of the time, they don't fight, but they still get the payday. And it's almost like that favor you did for the UFC makes you now for sure number one. So yeah. Who knows? I'm rethinking it. In the coming event, we're good with the main event, right? Final thoughts? Yeah, okay. In the co-main event, we had I lost it here. Rafael Fiziev versus Brad Riddell. These guys used to be former teammates when they trained together in Thailand. Riddell went back to New Zealand City Kickboxing is his team with Eugene Behrman, the coach, Israel Adesanya, their champion, and, of course, others like Kai Kara France and Dan Hooker. And Rafael Fiziev is no longer in Tiger Muay Thai. I think I saw him with Henry Hooft, and so he's not with those guys. This was a very impressive kick, man, a spinning wheel kick that he hit him with. Except, after you saw what Guido went through earlier, you just think maybe they could have let it go because Riddell had the right reaction. Riddell started almost talking to himself, almost like a cartoon, like, which way did he go? But then, like, half a second later, he's actually going for it for a single, even before the ref is going in there. And I'm just wondering if he grabs the single and can hang on for, like, 10 seconds and clear the cobwebs. Could it have gone longer? Possibly. Or could Fiziev have just shaken his leg out and then pounded him a few more times and then that one would really be it? You know, I don't know. That's why I won't call it a bad stoppage. It just seemed like a little bit of an early stoppage, but I won't call it a bad stoppage because of the feedback that he gave the ref. And that's it, like that moment where he seemed like he talked to himself and then his hands were out there. You know what I mean? Like, it just seemed like he really was blanked out for a second, and then everything came back to him just as Fiziev's coming in to close, and that's why his reaction was a single, and then they stopped it. So in the end, we're good. You know, I think we're good. I think Riddell's good, and I think the better man definitely won.
Yeah, it was an odd stoppage for me because, you know, if you look at where the kick landed, it landed like right by the ear, right? That's more of an equilibrium thing than it is like a straight knockout thing. And whenever it's an equilibrium thing, it's just a matter of seconds that'll come back to you. And your brain is still there. You know, you could still think. You're just a little kind of woozy. You know, things aren't really straight for you, but they even out. So I think no matter what, when you're a referee, you kind of got to see the way the guy lands and what his first thing is, what he does, his first movement. And I don't know that we got that chance there. In the end, you're probably right. It probably could have just ended with a couple hammer fists. You know, it could have gotten worse. But you never know. You know, you could hold on and maybe the cobwebs clear out and we got our fight. It keeps going. So I probably wouldn't say it was a bad stoppage, just maybe an early stoppage. Now, I don't know if that's the same thing, but to me, I think it was just a little early.
Yeah. And you know what? For 2.5 rounds, whatever this fight went, man, they really went at it. They were really hitting each other with some hard punches. It's not like Riddell was overwhelmed. He just was getting the short of the less of every exchange just by a little bit. A couple he would win, but for the most part, it was starting to just mount up. And that's why I feel like the right guy won anyway. And Fiziev, I mean, he's just really been on a roll. So kudos to him. So had Riddell. I think Riddell had come in winning 4 in a row or something like that.
4?
Actually, he was 7 in a row overall, 4 in a row in the UFC before he ran into Fiziev. And then Fiziev is now, let's see, he's beaten Riddell, Bobby Green, Moicano, Diakese, and Alex White. He had lost to Mustafayev in his UFC debut, but he's won 5 straight since. He's now 11-1. But he's exciting, man. That guy really just has great, great striking. I became a fan of him after his fight versus Bobby Green.
Yeah, no, his complete game just makes everything so much fun. His personality. I like everything about that guy, man. I can't wait for him to take kind of that next step is what we need here in the next matchup.
I agree. And it seems like the former teammates really, really are going to keep that relationship of kind of being friends, and there was no bad blood that spills over. Jamal Hill defeated Jimmy Crute. This was a vicious ending, man. It was just a KO, straight up KO. The follow-up probably wasn't a picnic, and no, I won't even go there. I mean, that's the way the fight ended. You know what I mean? Impressive bounce back win for Jamal Hill after losing to Paul Craig. And I bet you it had to be in his head a little bit that Crute also defeated Paul Craig at one point. So if the fight remains standing, of course, Hill can hold his own against anybody. But against the ground, you know, how would he react? Remember, he had his elbow, you know, crushed in that other fight that I mentioned. And so how would he react to adversity on the ground against someone who can bring it, man? And that's what Jimmy Crute can do. But we talked to him twice, once right after the loss and once after his camp just before the fight. And neither time did he seem too concerned, almost put off by the questioning. And now I get it. I think what I get is that because he knew how to deal with the loss, the whole freaking out over I'm facing another jiu-jitsu guy or someone that's even beating the guy that just beat me, I'm not even worried about it because I've already filed it, and now this is a new matchup, and he's got to deal with me, not I got to deal with him.
True. Yeah, Jamal's, like, different, man. But, you know, the way he came out there and just finished that fight so quickly was the best-case scenario for him. However, you know, you got to remember this fight was originally scheduled. You know, this is the second booking of this fight because his elbow just wasn't where he needed it to be. So when you get like a quick finish like this, sometimes what fighters like to do is get that quick turnaround, you know, and just come back and do it again and maybe make up for that paycheck. But he's in a situation for where do you really want to be in camp, you know, during the holidays and all that? You probably already missed Thanksgiving. You want to miss Christmas too. I think he has a young daughter. So I don't know if he's going to want to do that, but it would be nice, especially, you know, he's a young cat, get that experience, make that money, maybe get closer to a new contract, because this is the type of guy you want out there. You know, we've been saying it for a long time. This kid's got skills. Now the world's starting to see it. He's got pretty good skills, and I think he can go a long way. So we'll have to see. And I did not know that he had made a trip out to Sanford MMA. Did you?
Jamal Hill? I didn't know that either.
Yeah, I thought they said that on the broadcast that he took a little trip down there too, which is good. You know, he does great for being kind of in a small camp back home. But there is something,
a lot of love too.
Yeah, but there's something about getting looks and training with some big names every day. I think that's good, finding that little mixture of both.
Yeah. Crute's eye looked like hell. And then I heard some post fight and Hill said he planned on having some beers with Crute the same way when he was on the receiving end with Paul Craig. Him and Paul Craig had some beers. So nice to see that sportsmanship and a lot of respect all the way around. So pretty cool, you know. That's a round robin. You know, each guy is kind of beating the other guy, and so now they all kind of have a win on each other. So I'll say it again: Crute's beating Craig. Craig's beating Hill, Hill's beating Crute, and now we'll see who can distance themselves from that little round robin. It happens a lot in MMA. I see it a lot when I do the rankings, but Hill has a lot to build on. That was a nice finish and a good bounce back win. And look, to be fair, those questions aren't bad questions when the press asks them, you know, about those devastating losses or about a striker that gets manhandled. Because I remember Kevin Holland kind of went through the same thing, and Kevin Holland has a lot of confidence, maybe even more confidence than Hill, you know, and kind of like, I got this. But then I remember a couple times, same thing on the ground. I wouldn't say fish out of water because I saw improvement, but still not the answer, you know. And so when it happens, then it's like, oh, you know, that's your second fight where you've gotten dominated on the ground. What do you do? But it just never got there. It never got there for Hill. He shut that down, and that's going to be tremendous for him because I'm telling you, the press, the fans, the promotion, when you start losing a certain way, they'll remind you of it. And that's the part that gets old.
Yeah, but the sky's the limit for this dude. I think he's still got a lot of room to get a lot better, and I like the things he says. I like even when he said, hey, man, I got the best hands in the UFC. Like, I like when fighters do that. It helps you remember who they are and his performances in the cage. I mean, are you not going to remember a guy like that? He just walked in and worked this guy in like 45 seconds or something, you know, like in front of a very large crowd, you know, on ESPN. That's huge.
Yeah. Clay Guida defeated Leandro Santos, submission rear naked choke. You did not mishear me. Clay Guida submitted Leandro Santos. So Leandro Santos, 41. Clay Guida, 39 himself. Two older cats in there in the lightweight division. Santos just doesn't fight very often. And he's older. A lot of times you almost forget who he is, but he's developed a nice little striking game. But what he's really known for is his jiu-jitsu. He's also a coach at Novo Niao, and he's coached a lot of fighters in Brazil just on jiu-jitsu alone, and he's competed at high levels of jiu-jitsu. But I'll say this, and this is not to come at Clay Guida at all. He did his job. He withstood a beating because Santos was putting it on him. But he basically submitted and exhausted Leandro Santos. I think if they were to grapple, I think your money would be a little safe with Santos. But he got the job done. He got the job done. I remember when my man over there, Fluffy Hernandez from the MMA Gold team, defeated
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, Silva or whatever. That was like, whoa, Adolfo. What the hell just happened? Vieira, sorry. I think a lot of it just has to do with exhaustion. Just they want to get the hell out of there. But I commend Clay for that awesome chin he's had over the year, the toughness, his wrestling mentality. He will just not be broken. And he hung in there. And then he had a ref that gave him a lot of chance. I think No Nonsense was the coach in this one. But Clay Guida just will not go away. You know what I mean? And he's still competing. He's still a true test for young athletes. And then when it's a veteran versus veteran, where maybe one guy's on their way out or could possibly be on their way out, you know, he's held his own in those matchups as well. I mean, Clay Guida's put in his time in the UFC. I was happy to see him. I once sat next to his parents, and I got to know them, and they're so nice. You would never guess that those two put out two beasts like his brother and him, you know, that they've said it themselves. They get in some trouble, and, they're just some mean bastards. But we've also gotten to know Clay Guida earlier in his career. He'd come by the studio and, you know, tell some great stories and things like that. And he was always just such a really, really nice guy. So I've always just kind of left him alone. We don't talk to him as much now as we used to, but quietly cheered for him, you know, because he's had the recipe and he sticks to it. Of beating guys. I remember this matchup reminded me a lot of Nate Diaz. And that's the fight I actually saw with his parents. Nate's tall with some good hands and great jiu-jitsu, you know what I mean? But I knew Clay was capable of possibly staying out of the submissions and using his wrestling and ground and pound to get the win. And he did.
It's funny that you bring up that name, because that's a name that he brought up that he'd like to fight. He'd like that to have that fight. And I mean, look, man, I get it, but that ain't going to happen. I don't think the UFC is going to set that up. There's really nothing for them to gain with that. I think the UFC has to figure out whether Nate's going to stay or go. And if he's going to go, then you need him to kind of put someone else over on the way out. I think that's why they're looking at the Shamaya fight. But, you know, Nate doesn't want that. He feels disrespected by that, which is pretty crazy, but. Yeah, as far as Nate Diaz and Clay Guida, that just ain't gonna happen. But respect for him for putting it out.
Yeah, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I remember he stayed out of trouble. Anthony Pettis is really, really tough in the jiu-jitsu side of the game, you know. But then I've also seen him get submitted by Charles Oliveira. So tall and lanky, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But Clay, you know, if he doesn't lose that split decision to Mark Madsen, who's never lost, by the way, he'd be riding a win streak of Michael Johnson, Mark Madsen, and Leandro Santos, all tough lightweights. And I'm not, of course, in any way saying, yeah, he could be making a run or anything like that. I'm just saying, three fights in a row when you're a marketable fighter, and trust me, the UFC will have you opening a pay-per-view or whatever. That's all. You just kind of move up in the world a little bit. I think he's been lost after all these years. Him and Jim Miller kind of get just placed on these prelims. You start looking at who's in the main event, who's in the co-main event, remind me. Featured bout, and then, oh, okay, cool, cool, cool. And then you start looking at the prelims on Fight Week, like, holy shit, so-and-so's on this card. Even the great BJ Penn was on the prelims down in Brazil. And that's just the kind of like the life of a fighter, you know what I mean? The good and the bad. And you can usually tell by the placement on a card where your contract situation is or what you're standing with the promotion is. All right, moving on to complete the main card. All this on ESPN, by the way. Good to see them back in prime time. I think with college football starting to fade, it was time for them to kind of get back there and us to get away from the morning shows, the matinee shows. Chris Curtis, can't say enough about this guy, defeats Brendan Allen. TKO. So this is his second fight, second win in a couple months, or in a month. Hell, we saw him win when we were in Virginia. Phil Haas is who he beat when we were in Virginia. And we were with one of his coaches, Eric Nixick, who was really, really emotional. We were actually signing some autographs for the military, and the fight was on behind us. So we were kind of looking over our shoulder. And next thing you know, Chris Curtis handled his business there. And Eric was super, super happy. Of course, Eric's one of his assistant coaches. I got to give credit to Nate Pettit, Steve Straub stand-in, Steve Straub stuntman. That's our good friend that passed away. They actually kind of look like each other. Nate Pettit's the one that is the reason why Chris Curtis is a little bit more of a permanent fixture at Extreme Couture. They really, really worked on wrestling a lot. And what they wanted to do was instill in Chris Curtis that even though you're a striker, when you're on the ground, you're not going to be a fish out of the water and you're going to put in some hard work. So he's gone in there with some confidence and just let them hands fly. And now that's two knockouts goes in a month over respected middleweights. Haas is respected. He's not Israel Adesanya. He's not Robert Whittaker, but he's a tough out. And now he just took out Brandon Allen. He was ranked two. And this guy's a welterweight. He knows it. We all know it. That's a welterweight's body, except – he's stepping in for – remember when we interviewed Brad Tavares? That was the original opponent for Brandon Allen. Mm-hmm. And then it fell through. There was a sequence of a couple fights that fell through, but they stayed within the same gym, and it wound up in Chris Curtis's hands. I think Olise was supposed to fight him, and then something happened there, and now it's Chris Curtis.
I'm curious to see who his next booking is going to be, like how – the UFC is going to approach Chris Curtis, because I think when they gave him a shot, you know, like it wasn't your traditional, hey, this guy's on a winning streak, let's give him a shot. Like, it wasn't really like that. So now how are they going to look at him? You know, they're going to look at it as like, we might have something here. Are they just going to try and use him to set someone else up? Who knows? But two wins in the UFC after almost, pretty much calling it quits on his career and then coming back. Huh?
A couple times he's retired.
Yeah. Just coming back and getting the streak that he had, what I thought was pretty impressive. But finally getting that fight in the UFC, like that's a milestone in a lot of people's career, just getting there. Then he got a win. And then another one. I mean, that's pretty crazy, man. That's something to be very, very proud of, him and his coaches.
He retired after Dana White Contender Series. And then he retired after PFL, when he got knocked out by Ray Cooper. And he lost two times that night. He actually lost in a semifinal because, you know, PFL goes twice a night, one night prior to COVID. He lost, but because that guy, which I believe was Magomed Karamov, because he couldn't go, they said, well, let's bring in the guy that lost to Mago, which was Chris Curtis, who was in the locker room, obviously devastated from the loss. They bring in him in, and then to top it off, he gets iced by Ray Cooper. So, yeah, if you're ever going to retire, you're like, oh, man, this is the time. I just don't have it, I guess, to compete at this level. Remember, that's a welterweight fight that he lost there. At least he got his two paychecks, but still, he lost. And it was a devastating KO. That was the same note. That was the same day, by the way, anybody that's followed this show for a long time. If you've ever heard Go say, man, I once went to some fights, and the next day I was in a dentist chair getting my wisdom teeth pulled out. That was that day. We ran into what's become kind of like a fight dentist. I don't want to use that exact name because that belongs to Dr. Adam. He was the original fight dentist. But a dentist who's loved here, Dr. Steve, you know, in Las Vegas, and he's been working with a lot of fighters. He runs into Goes. Little side note story here. Hey, man, when are you going to come in and get your wisdom teeth taken out? Goes had discussed that with him on a prior visit from him to our studio. And Goes said, oh, I don't know, kind of what's good for you? Just as he's chugging a beer, kind of like no big deal, trying to probably just enjoy the next fight. They agree on the next day. The next day, Goes comes back with puffy jaw and blood everywhere. And, you know, he basically had to eat soup and out of a straw for 48 hours. What a turnaround that night, huh?
I actually thought maybe the beer was going to save me. You know, hey, can't have alcohol before surgery. He's like, nah, don't worry about it. Just come in tomorrow, like 8 a.m. or some shit like that. I was like,
what? Didn't you say you walked out at 8:07? It was like one of the fastest extractions ever or something like that.
It took him, I want to say like 16 minutes, but probably eight of those minutes were just one tooth. and the other ones he just popped out. He's pretty good at it.
All four, right?
Yeah, all four.
Wow. So, yeah, we'll never forget that night, you know, basically at the Mandalay Bay. And getting back to Chris Curtis, he retired. He was down on himself. And then he quietly, remember, with COVID in 2020, a lot of things happened quietly. Hell, the world stopped. Sports world stopped. Everything stopped. MMA stopped. But MMA also came back quickly. And somehow, Chris Curtis snuck in 5 fights in a row. And that's why he was ready to be, you know, when the UFC looks for alternates, anyone that lives in Vegas is in a prime spot. If you're ready and you're in Vegas, you're in a prime spot. But it's not because he was just in Vegas that he got it. He won 5 in a row, folks. And so he was ready. That fight ultimately fell through. It was in October. There was just a sweet sequence of fights that somebody was in, somebody was out, somebody stepped up, somebody made weight, somebody declined to fight. But by then, Curtis was in the front door, and now Curtis has turned it into a 2-fight win streak in the middleweight division. And so what might be next for him? He said, hey, look, I took no damage. I'll fight again on Saturday on the pay-per-view. If any middleweight slips, I'm ready. So that's his role, goes, is if a middleweight slips, he's ready because he's playing with house money. I think he knows that his real future, now that he's been working on wrestling and his mindset set and he's settled in at a new gym, all respect to Syndicate, that's where he was. I don't think there's any hate towards it at all. It's just that he kind of connected with Coach Pettit. Any of that future would be at welterweight. But for now, he's playing with house money, and he can't make welterweight, I don't think, that quick. I don't think it would be wise. But right now, he'll just take on another middleweight. And let's just say he were to lose, he's 2-1 as a middleweight. And I think by then he'd go, all right, enough with that. You know, it's over. But I look just for shits and giggles, and we have 2 middleweight matchups, Jordan Wright versus Bruno Silva, Andre Muniz versus Eric Anders, I suppose. And we, again, don't hope this, but if something were to happen, you got your backup in Chris Curtis. And then there's one more fight to end the year, I guess. That's the Derek Lewis, Chris Daukaus card. Gerald Meerschaert and Dustin Stolfus is on that. They're middleweights. But other than that, those are the only 3 middleweight fights that are left. I wouldn't dare put them in a light heavyweight bout. I think that's too much. But I think basically if he can't get on one of those, with the last 2 weeks of December being off and the first 2 weeks of January being off in the UFC, I think at that point he'd be ready to take on a proper welterweight matchup. And then let's just see how far he can take it. But he's got a newfound confidence.
Yeah, I would, you know, like I say, make that cheddar while you can. I think it's a good idea. Even if it is a loss, I mean, as long as it's not a horrible one, yeah, you're right. You know, 2-1. Okay, cool. Start the next year off. You didn't think you were going to be in the UFC. So, I mean, I think this is all gravy for this guy.
Alex Morano defeated Mickey Gall in what was the first fight on the main card of this UFC on ESPN card. He defeated him 30-27 across the board. Mickey Gall is usually a guy that has actually starts off really, really strong and then fades a little. To be fair, his cardio was much better than it has been, but Alex Morano just had an answer for him, and he was just too much everywhere. So he was the rightful winner. And that again, that was that. So let me go through the prelims a little bit because I want to get to Bellator as well, but there was some interesting fights on the prelims as well. Dusko Todorovic defeated Maki Patolo, TKO punches in the first round. Manel Kopp defeated Zaglas Zumagulov, first round, TKO stoppage there. That fight was not going good early on for Kopp. He was dealing with some with some punches to his face and some big, nice kicks to the calf. And but he turned it around. Brian Barberina defeated Darian Weeks. Cheyenne Bays, it's still listed that way. I'm sorry. She wants to go by Cheyenne Valismus now. She defeated Mallory Martin. Now, that was a fun fight to watch, but I'm also a Valismus mark. I'm a big fan of hers. William Knight defeated Alonzo Menafield. Claudio Puelles defeated Chris Gutzenmacher. And by the way, that night Menafield fight had a lot of controversy. A lot of people scored it for Menafield, but it was close. Vince Morales defeated Luis Smoka, first round KO punches. So those were your winners. Let me give you 3 names. Morales, Puelles, the Peruvian, William Knight, the controversial win over Menafield. Any thoughts there?
Puelles. I thought Puelles looked really good. He's a Peruvian brother of ours, so that always makes things special. And then, yeah, I thought there was controversy in the Menafield fight, but for sure.
Menafield had a lot of time on the ground, and Knight had some striking, but I wouldn't call it damaging striking. But there's this big emphasis on scoring points via striking, and I think that's what got him the win. He probably the last minute, I guess, he won that, the last 45 seconds. But Menafield had so much time on the ground that a lot of people were like, what the hell? Why is he getting the call? But I think that was basically the reason. So maybe not so much the damage. It's just that striking's a big emphasis. And Menafield, to be fair, he wasn't dominating on the ground. He was controlling. He was banking minutes of that riding time, we call it. So I think that's why it was easy to sway the judges on that one. As far as Puelles, I thought Gritzenmacher was a little lazy in leaving that leg out. So that knee bar was very, very nice. And you don't see too many fights end via knee bar. And then as far as Velasquez versus Mallory Martin, I don't think I remember two strawweights hitting each other like that and making it so much fun to watch since probably Zhang Weili and Joanna. Rose is so proficient, she just kind of ends the damn fight. But, I mean, these girls were cracking each other, man. And, you know, there's not as many KOs in women's MMA. And so you just don't see a lot of that fast twitch, a lot of that explosion and power, and much less at the strawweight division. But this fight had me on the edge of my seat. They made it really, really fun. And again, Velasquez, I'm a mark of hers, but she got the job done. Remember, guys, we interviewed her and she had COVID and there was some doubts.
Yeah, so, you know, like George said, we're big marks for her because we've actually called her fights or amateur fights. Normally I probably would have put a play on her, but because of that interview, boy, that was just some weird circumstances, man. Her wait until the very end. I mean, she had a cough that was very similar to ours. When we were sick, when we did that interview, I think the three of us were just trying not to cough during the interview. And somehow I thought, all right, well, if she's going to win, it might be early because she just might not have the cardio to make it till the end. You know, that she said it herself, the COVID did a number on her lungs. So to see her come out, get the victory and get it in the way she did, it's almost like she can't go into a fight without some sort of underlining issue, you know, something going on in her life. Maybe that's just what drives her to these types of performances, but that was a good performance for her.
She's an emotional fighter. And at the same time, you said her personal life. And as you know, we found out towards the end of the interview, she was going to go by Velasquez. You know, it's not hard to put the math together. Obviously something's happening there with their marriage to JP, UFC flyweight, JP Bays. We've seen them a lot in the gym together, I'll say, meaning where it looked like they were, you know, chatting in between rounds or something like that. And so this must have been something recent. So, yeah, when you want to put a play on someone and you hear something's going on personally and possibly health-wise, yeah, you just stay away. But I've been trying to put some money on Velasquez on a few fights, and it's gone well for me. That Montserrat one was that – remember that schoolyard choke she couldn't break out of?
Yeah.
I don't feel like I put my money on the bad fight, on the wrong fighter there. It's just she just kind of had no answer for one technique, and there was a referee in there that let the fight stay, you know, where it was. But I bet you if they were to fight again, I would probably bet Velasquez again. Now, again, I'm not saying, oh, she's going to be Rose, but she's just exciting to watch, and she's cool, and she's got this unique personality where she's super sweet, and then all it takes is just this one comment that comes out of left field that's so gangster, you just laugh, man, because you usually don't get it from someone that's been so nice and how you been, you know, and then all of a sudden they just, bam, drop a hammer of a line on, you know, where they sound like a hitman personally. Oh, yeah, let me just go take this fool out in the parking lot, stab him in the neck, you know, like something like, whoa, you were just asking me how Christmas shopping was, you know, season's going or something. But anyway, good for her. Any thoughts on Barbarina, Cop, or Todorovic? Those were the other three fights I mentioned.
Well, you know, when we get to Bellator 2, you'll see like Extreme Couture had a really, really good weekend. I think they went 5-1 or whatever, but Cop is a guy that's been there at Extreme. And I thought that
he's exciting to watch. He's the new Uriah Hall. When you go there, he's just as much fun to watch practice as some of the guys compete in real fights.
Man, he had the death combo, though. I mean, that was – I would not want to be on the other end of that. Yeah, there's a lot of promise there with that kid, and I think he's going to be getting better. But these prelim fights, man, like you have to leave your mark, otherwise people are going to forget. And I feel like Cop maybe left his mark there in that fight, and left the fans with something wanting to see this guy fight again.
All right, now we had to pick on him for something. He was asked by DC – what's next for you? That's a huge moment for a lot of fighters where you can almost sometimes do your own matchmaking. It's worked before, folks. And it's not like you can say, oh, it only works 5% of the time or 15% of the time. I would venture to say it's somewhere in the 35-40 range. I won't say that one out of every other, you know, 50% gets what they want. But you throw out a name out there and it, I think 30% is fair, 30, somewhere around there. So it's worth it, you know, if you really feel like, okay, this one would get a lot of attention. It'd be a fun fight for me, someone to wake up to do my training camp, that'll test me, that'll get my name out there even further. Then I think you grab it. And Cop said, not the worst thing in the world, but he said, I don't call anyone out. Let them call me. I'm the biggest ticket. You know, I'm the one that everyone needs. Well, no, see, like, he's exciting. I just finished saying he's exciting to watch practice. And he just had a good win over ZZ, I call him. It's just easier to say that. But I still think there could have been one name out there he could have attached himself to. Because Brandon Moreno's not calling him out. Davison Figueiredo's not calling him out. I'm not even sure Askar Askarov's. It's not the deepest division. But I just don't know that the top three or four are calling him out. If Kai Kara France beats Cody Garbrandt, I don't think he's saying, now that I beat Cody, give me my nail. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're always looking upwards. So I thought if he would have said, I want the hey fans, was that a fun fight? And then the Apex, you know, the 75 that are there, a little roar. How'd you like to see me fight the winner next week's fight? Kai Kara France versus Cody Garbrandt. Would that be exciting? You know, and then some media right there, some Twitter reaction to that. And next thing you know, you might have yourselves a fight because the winner of Kai Kara France versus Cody Garbrandt might be saying, oh, I can't wait to fight for the title, blah, 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 whatever. But, well, that fight's still not till January. And plus you got Askar Askarov who's saying, I'm now healthy and I can fight. Plus Pantoja's, you know, he's saying, I got to win over Moreno. You know, he's throwing his name into the hat. So I don't know. I thought he could have played his card a little bit better there.
I hear you. I thought it was a little unique in the way that he phrased it. But yeah, you don't want to lose that. That's just real estate that can go miles for you.
Big time. But I'm happy for him. And hopefully when we run into the gym, we can do an off guard and just see if maybe he has some second thoughts or something like that. All right, before we transition to Bellator, this was big news that came in this morning, and that was the fight card for UFC. Let me put a bow on it by just saying these last few things. Cheyenne Willismus and Mallory Martin got $50,000 for Fight of the Night. Good for them. Fiziev, Hill, Guida, and Curtis all took home Performance of the Night. So the UFC gave out six $50,000 bonuses. That never makes me angry. Good for them for doing that. And I'm, again, happy that Willismus, who once said she didn't basically have a pot to piss in, man, now has put some checks away. So good for her. All right. The big news is, of course, Tommy Fury is out of his boxing match versus Jake Paul. And now guess what? Tyron Woodley gets to step in, except it's happening on December 8th. Goes. You know Woodley can fill out them suits and he can put some weight in between fights. If he's been staying ready, this is going to be huge for him. He got that damn tattoo and everything, and you know it's a big payday. He's got a $500,000 bonus if he knocks out Jake Paul in that contract. But he gets his rematch, again, December 18th, not of 2022. It's December 18th in 12 days, less than 2 weeks. So he's got his moment. But if he hasn't been training, versus a guy that has been training, then, you know, obviously there'll be a little bit of a disadvantage there in terms of fight shape.
Man, I don't know how to feel about this, you know, because I feel like Tyron Woodley was bothered by the things that people said after that loss. And I have to believe if there's anything left in him of being a fighter, he's going to headhunt. He's going to go out there and try and knock this guy out. But the thing I don't like about that is now we got to watch a third fucking fight of this. And I don't know if I want to see it. I barely want to see a second one, let alone a third one. So we'll see. You know,
what was so bad about the first? It was kind of fun towards the end because Woodley was pulling an upset.
I can't trust Tyron Woodley. I can't trust him to go out there and do what he's supposed to do. I hate watching a fight where a fighter just doesn't pull the trigger, especially a guy like him, and especially a guy that was having success. Like, you just sit there and go, there should be no reason for you to even give one round away, let alone three, four. Like, go out there and be a menace. The guy's afraid of you. He's definitely afraid of you. He's a dude that picked up boxing. You're a guy that's been doing martial arts your entire life. He is definitely afraid of you, but you're not using that to your advantage. That those things drive me crazy.
Okay, fair enough. He's gone the 8 rounds before, so he knows what that feels like. He knows he can win rounds from Jake Paul, and he even got one judge to score it for. Remember, it was a split. So I think even though he doesn't have the full training camp, if he's been keeping in some shape, then I think at least his mind will put him over the edge. You know, he's also gotten older as well. We'll see. And then, oh man, right in the middle of Thanksgiving and Christmas, that's about the time where even if you've been keeping in shape, you kind of take a week or two off because you have nothing on the horizon. So he caught him at the right time, you know. He keeps his word against Woodley, albeit he didn't do it originally the way they agreed, apparently, at least according to Woodley. I get the tattoo, all right, I'm in. But now he got the fight. I guess that was his first option. Who knows? So, and Woodley couldn't really decline it because if they went to someone else, you know, the ship may have still just sailed on Woodley because Fury obviously would probably get his chance when he's healthy. Mr. Fillon, if he has a good one against Jake Paul, maybe he has a rematch clause and maybe now he's now the new toast of the town. I don't know. But that fight's official. It's happening in Tampa on December 18th. Be on the lookout for it. And I'm sure we'll be talking more about it. And whether you like it or not, folks, this is news, man. Our traffic, you all, you listeners of this show, you readers of the site, the commenters of the stories, the sharers of social media, you tell us what you're interested in. And the celebrity boxing and these Paul brothers are popular. Now, I know some of you are like, oh, man. But I feel like I need to just remind you of it. We listen to you guys. All right. Sergio Pettis defeated Kyoji Horiguchi. Spinning back fist, caught the tail end of his chin in round 4. He gets his title defense. He feels like a proper champion. It was not going his way, he goes. The fight was not going his way, man. This was a big-time comeback win for Sergio Pettis. I don't want to take that away from him. He's the winner. But, again, if you didn't see the fight or you haven't gotten to it or whatever, don't be fooled. Kyoji Horiguchi was competing his ass off. He was on his way back to winning this title fight before he got caught.
Yeah, that was unfortunate for Horiguchi. I mean, he was dominating. He was winning every aspect of that game and or of that fight. And not only that, but it just looked like Sergio Pettis didn't have really an answer for anything. It didn't look like it was getting any better for him. You know, that's what he needed was, I don't want to say a Hail Mary because it's not a Hail Mary, but he needed something like that to happen. And he pulled it off. And you can't take that away from him. You know, Horiguchi could have landed something very similar. Anybody can do those types of things. So you can't take it away from Pettis, but definitely there are going to be some question marks now, right, going forward. The guys that are underneath Sergio Pettis are going to have more confidence. They're going to see holes in that game that maybe they can exploit. But it's good to hear about the Grand Prix. I'm down with that.
Yeah, 8 fighters are going to compete for $1 million, and the champion, Pettis in this case, will defend his title along the way. So you got Patchy Mix, Juan Archuleta, who's the former champ, Kyoji Horiguchi, who's also a former champ. They're in it. Raytheon Stotts. I'm sorry, I don't have the list in front of me, but those are some of the big names that are in it right there. Oh, Gallagher, he's in it as well. So the eight of them will fight for, the $1 million prize, the Grand Prix title, and the title will be at stake every time Pettis defends. This will happen in 2022. So that was big news coming out of Bellator's last card of the year, Bellator 272. Jeremy Kennedy from Extreme Couture got a win over longtime veteran of Bellator, Emmanuel Sanchez, 30-27 across the board. Don't sleep on Kennedy. He's only lost to, like, really, really good fighters. 17-3. He's just kind of had like a tumultuous run at times of just bad luck and injury, but he's only lost to Alexander Volkanovski and then Laurentino over at PFL, who we also beat and finished. So he's kind of 1-1 there with him. And then Borix, who's one of the tougher featherweights over at Bellator, lost to him. The loss that he took to Pineda over at PFL eventually got overturned when Pineda tested positive. That's not really, I guess, a loss on his record, but keep an eye on that guy. He's also coached by a good friend of the show, Eric Nixick. So Josh Hill defeated Jared Scoggins. Johnny Eblen defeated Colin Huckabody. That was your main card. And then Kai Kamaka, who recently ended his run with the UFC, he shakes that off and registers a win over at Bellator. You know, all this just happened a few months ago. So that was a nice work there by the agent, whoever his agent is, to get him out of one show or, you know, at least assist with the exit of one show and putting him on the next biggest show in town and already getting a win. Spike Carlisle, who had gotten cut earlier in the year, by the way, he's already gotten four wins. Goes, this was his fourth win outside the UFC. I remember this guy fighting Billy Quarantillo. It felt like a year ago, but he's gotten four wins since then. The red heavy guy, the ginger guy.
Yeah. Hey, really quick, going back to that Grand Prix, I don't know if you heard Scott Coker, but he had actually thought about having that first round in Japan and that it was even a possibility of them going to 16 fighters for that tournament. That would have been legit. So he was going to talk to Ryzen about putting that on in Tokyo Dome or, you know, in Japan. And I thought that would have been amazing, man. If they could have pulled that off, that would have been really, really, really cool. And then even having the, remember when the last time when they did 16, that's when they did kind of like that show. Remember where you kind of like can pick who you want to fight, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. They would bring that back. So that would have been interesting, dude.
Yeah. I got the full names here. So I mentioned Stotts, Gallagher. I think the two that I was missing was Magomedov, who's the only guy that ever gave Peter Yan a loss. Peter Yan's also put an L on him. Leandro Higo, I think, was the other one that I was missing out on. I think it was the one who Caldwell beat to get the title years ago before he lost it to Horiguchi, and then I think he's also lost to Higo. So I think they're 1-1. But Pettis, Kyoji Horiguchi, Archuleta, Mix, and then these cats that I just named. And, yeah, it would have been epic if they did that, goes, especially because Ryzen has great shows to end the year. So even though Pettis and Horiguchi couldn't go, if some of the other ones were ready to go and get this thing kickstarted, let's do it.
Hell, yeah.
16 deep, I think it would have been pushing it, but maybe they could have done 12 and four guys could have gotten buys. But, yeah, that's not a proper Grand Prix. I think in a Grand Prix, just everyone fights and that's that. You know, even the NFL is getting away from – having the extra week off for two teams. Only one team gets the extra week off this week. Whoever has the best record in the AFC and the NFC, who don't quote me on this, but I think right now it's Arizona in the NFC by a game. And in the AFC, who's got it now, man? Don't tell me the Patriots wound up sneaking all the way back to the top. I forget, but whoever that is, they get the week off and everyone else is battling and they added that wild card and the extra game. They're going to go 17 this year. 17 games. To be fair, they did get rid of two preseasons. So, anyway, there you have it, folks. That was Bellator. That was Bellator 272, their final card of the year. And a huge announcement to start things off in 2022. And that's it for today. You know, we kind of went over the news with Jake Paul versus Tyron Woodley, and we went over these two cards, which is what we wanted to do. We got a lot of stuff to do today. So I don't want to forget UFC 269, our watch along.
Yeah, as George was saying, we have our watch along this Saturday. So make sure you tune in. Let's see. Oh, you back?
Yeah, did I fall out?
Yeah, you froze.
Back on Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll be with you for the four fight prelims on ESPN and the five fights on the main card, which has two title fights. Amanda Nunes, the GOAT, the women's GOAT. She is going to be defending her belt against Juliana Pena. And then we also have Charles Oliveira defending the UFC lightweight title against Dustin Poirier. Please, everybody, make it to the finish line. Kai Kara France versus Cody Garbrandt. That's a big one. And Jeff Neal, he's still on that card against Ponzinibbio. I saw him on the card still. So he had some trouble. Maybe we should have got into that. But we'll see if we can touch on some more of the news when we come back on Thursday's show. We got to bounce out for now. And I hope you all had a nice weekend. Keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. It is fight week. And again, we'll see you on Thursday. And don't forget about Saturday. Please start telling your friends. We're back, baby. UFC 269 watch along. Courtesy of Panda and USA Today Sports and Tipico as well. All right, folks, we're out of here. Go out there and be a champion.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.